All right. Welcome, Mr. Oliver Jones.
Hello, Joseph Kim.
We are here with GameMakers, and today we are going to be talking about your journey here in India and co-founding Bombay Play. So we're basically going to talk about, and in summary, first, how you came to India and why. Secondly, the gaming industry here in India and being an early employee at kind of two of the biggest gaming companies here in India, Zynga and Moonfrog. And finally, founding Bombay Play and more information about this category, which I think you're calling. Is it you or is it a wide term?
It's more than just me. There are a few others.
Okay.
But we're a small, secretive society who are trying to pioneer this space.
Awesome. Okay. So let's start at the beginning. And so I wanted to start by asking you about, you know, when did you come to India and why? And also, did your gaming journey start from where you came from? And I assume are you Welsh?
Yeah, I'm Welsh, yes. Ah. That's right. Well done. Oh. That's right.
Okay.
Fredwy and Cymraeg.
And did it start in, you know, abroad, or did it start when you came to India?
It's been a lifelong journey in gaming.
Okay.
Since a very young age. I think using early tools such as GameMaker and making the games that I wanted but didn't exist. I think the first game I wanted but didn't exist was Quidditch. You know, I was a big Potterhead. and so I really wanted to make that game, made it in sort of GameMaker. Turns out J.K. Rowling is a terrible game designer because the rules don't make sense. Why doesn't everyone catch the golden snitch, you know? So that's where I started at a very kind of young age, just hacking stuff, building stuff. And then throughout my undergrad and postgrad, it was always, you know, focused on games. Mm-hmm. After graduation, I graduated Brunel University London, and then immediately from there, well, almost immediately, I worked for a company called State of Play for a small while.
Okay.
Studio that actually won a BAFTA for its work.
Oh, nice.
For point-and-click adventures.
Okay.
Loom and Lumino City. And then sort of moved out to India to work for Zynga. A very, very soon after, you know, the graduation.
How did that happen? Did somebody from Zynga India reach out to you, or were you like looking to try and jump into India for some reason?
I was looking to jump into Zynga.
Okay.
You know, like back in 2010, 2011, Zynga was hot. And they were so disruptive. All the core gamers hated them. All the social gamers loved them. So as a game designer, you know, I was driven by making games that people would play.
Right.
Didn't really matter whether they were for myself or for somebody else.
Yeah.
And it just was immediately obvious. Like the mission statement of Zynga really rang true to me, which was, you know, why, you know, everyone deserves great games. Why does it have to be just people like yourself?
Okay.
And that resonated. I applied. I originally thought I was going to join Zynga in, I think it was Guildford or something at the time. But it turns out the position was in India. So, and then when I got the job offer, it was like, yeah, it's game designer. Great. It's in India, by the way. But as somebody young and foolish, I immediately broke up with my girlfriend and left. And that's how I came to India.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then what was that? So when you first landed here and started in Zynga, what was that experience like? How did you adjust to life here?
Well, I landed in Bangalore with like about $300 of traveler's checks. That was the whole, that's everything to my name. And a Nintendo Wii in my backpack.
Wow.
Yeah. But had a job at Zynga. So that was something.
And how big was Zynga India at that time when you joined?
I think it was less than 100, maybe around 100.
Okay.
You could say.
So still very early.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Worked on a game called Yeovil, which was one of the OG.
Ah, yeah, Robert Lai.
Yeah. And that game still runs today.
Wait, didn't they buy it back or didn't
they? Yeah, they bought, I think the community bought it. Okay. I'm not sure what the fate is today, but it's alive.
Okay, great.
And I actually love that game. It's just the epitome of, I guess, hypersocial, which is the thing that we're trying to sort of reinvigorate in 2022. And then the reason why I came out was because India was known for this place that had like not a great amount of, at least at that time, not a great amount of design talent. So that's why they kind of imported random Welsh dudes from London, apparently, to sort of spearhead the cause. And as such, sort of being at the right place, right time, ended up leading a bunch of, you know, multi-million dollar Zynga games that were at the time being brought from, you know, the US over to India.
Right.
Yeah.
So what was that like in terms of, like, if you were to characterize the game industry in India at that time, and maybe how it's progressed to today? Like, are there any major changes in terms of how the free-to-play game industry has developed, and more specific to India in terms of, like, whether it's, like, the specialization? Because, you know, obviously it kind of started off mainly live ops-oriented and that kind of thing, but maybe you can characterize how it was then versus now.
I think it was, even back then, we didn't know how to run live ops.
Okay.
You know, we needed a lot of help. And thankfully, you know, there were leaders in Zynga India who had a lot of trust from, you know, Pinkers, and were sort of left to their, you know, a lot of trust to run these games independently. And there were a whole lot of mistakes. Games went down, bad releases went out. We would be on our laptops. You know, the grind was real, like it's keeping those games alive and keeping the reputation of that team going, was a hard slog. I wouldn't say that we entirely mastered the art of live ops, but what we learned really was, we learned live ops the Zynga way, which was driving revenue every week. Like, what are you doing? What is the feature this week that will give you that extra 5-10% that you can show in your product review next week? That was the frequency of releases we were doing, and that's the pace we learned to run at. What that meant was that we didn't really have much time to think of the long term. We did start building out Bold Beats, but I feel that that's where our inexperience started to show.
Okay,
like when you start trying to build these, you know, trying to innovate in a live ops scenario, and you misread your audience. I mean, your audience is halfway around the world.
Right.
How are you supposed to know what they like? What they, you know, and we didn't really have the player council set up properly. Zynga today obviously has sorted out a lot of these problems, but back then it was very raw and we just did what we thought was best and ended up spending a whole lot of time on features that went nowhere, or releasing very janky features. So some of our best successes were actually like sales pop-ups where the exit button wasn't working for some reason, and you know, things like this. So, but where we are today, though, I think we have more people with actual building, like from scratch experience.
Okay,
and they know what it takes to build a higher quality product from the very beginning, and you know, it's not really a culture anymore of trying to get those quick wins.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, like, I'd say at the beginning of Moonfrog, quick wins was really our strategy, because we were running out of money quite fast. So you know, we ended up quote unquote fast following a bunch of things.
Okay.
But these days you have more mature teams.
Yeah.
Who are dedicating the time and the patience required to build a good quality product. Now, that being said, still way behind, I think, where we need to be.
Okay.
But thankfully, we have people like maybe you and your team and Bombay Play, like trying to spearhead the effort, and the people with the time, money, and patience to you know, develop world-class games from India.
And not to linger too much on the past, but certainly Zynga had a pretty profound impact on the Indian game development ecosystem, right? From Zynga, a bunch of people left and started companies like Moonfrog and Bombay Play, which you were a part of both of those, as well as a number of other gaming companies here. And Moonfrog is also one of the success stories here in India. And you having been at both of those companies, could you talk about maybe a little bit how those companies were as far as, like, if you were to compare or contrast culture, or maybe if you could talk about some of the things that they did well?
Okay. So the reason for these companies sort of splintering out from Zynga was really a matter of that we just grew enough comfort. We grew like enough confidence inside of Zynga, and we didn't see that there was anything that they were doing that we could not do ourselves. Right. You know, I'm sure we've all been in that situation where your boss is kind of halfway around the world and telling you can't do things, and sooner or later you get disgruntled. and I've been in that situation several times. Like, I worked for Glu Mobile as well here.
Okay.
In Hyderabad, actually.
Okay.
It was a matter of just getting the confidence and taking the plunge. I think back in the day, I'm not sure if it's still a mantra of Zynga, but it's Zynga speed. That was the saying, and we really live by it. Like, product reviews every week is no joke.
Right.
That's a lot of overhead. That's a lot of work.
Right.
You'd have typically one or two product managers just doing the reviews, and just presenting the work that was done.
Yeah.
What that really helps is give you an entrepreneurial mindset to gaming, and you know what the best practice, you know what the best in class are doing and what you need to do to get there.
Right.
So when we started, of course, product reviews every week isn't practical for a starter, especially when you have no product out there. But setting that sort of cadence, having something to show, playtesting frequently, pushing to sort of arrive at a conclusion, a new direction, every single week or every bi-weekly really allows you to move fast. And I think you see that DNA in a lot of companies here. So it's why you also see people trying to, more hyper-casual developers maybe exist in India because of this reason.
Right.
Because we've sort of kind of been trained to be hackers and trained to sort of keep experimenting as if it were sort of a live op setup, you could say, where we're, instead of releasing new features on a live ops game, we're releasing new games all the time.
Right.
And the sort of through scientific process, figuring out what works and what doesn't. Scientific process, I'd say, is the second thing. We learned to mistrust our own instincts and listen to the market. In fact, to say that you have strong conviction about something was often frowned upon. Like, how can you have conviction? You need something more than conviction here. So we really learned to follow the data.
Okay.
And so when it came to launching new games, I think the ruthlessness and of sort of seeing how that game is doing from a retention and monetization point of view and arriving at a quick conclusion. And I think those of us from Zynga who started our companies, that's the culture you will kind of see. Very results-driven, very scientific, and sort of hyper-aggressive in our pace. So I guess all of these things combined, we just want to sort of tell the world, we're making games in India and we're coming for you, you know? We're learning faster, damn it.
Right.
We're also failing a lot, but we're learning faster. And sooner or later, we're inevitable.
Yeah. So speaking more about the India-specific market, if you were to kind of characterize what's good and what... And you kind of touched upon some of the advantage of the Indian gaming market, but like where do you see left to go? What should the Indian gaming ecosystem or the developers here, what do they need to learn to improve to become more successful?
That's an interesting question, and I wouldn't necessarily make a blanket statement for everyone, because there's
It's situational.
India is such a big place.
Okay.
It's you have as many cultures in India as you do in Europe.
Okay.
And I think when you look at gaming companies as well, there is just people operating in all manner of ways.
Right.
You do have a few teams who are trying to build huge projects that may never see the light of day. And you do have many teams who are thinking very short term, right. almost paycheck to paycheck in the services industry, right. For example.
Yep.
I do wish that especially those who are starting this, service-based companies who are doing really great sort of work for international gaming companies. In fact, a lot of even AAA games get a lot of their services done through service providers in India.
Right.
I mean, here in Bangalore, you have sort of the Rockstar folks who are working on big, really big scale games, and they have developers, they have artists, they have technical artists, they've got the whole shebang pretty much, other than the design, operating out of it. They may even have the design, I'm not 100%. But I do wish that the service orientated studios do figure out a way to work on their own IP and get out of the service-driven model into a recurring sort of gaming studio-driven model. I think that would drive a lot more innovation.
Got it.
Although services is it's great for jobs, it's great for stability, but it's not so great for innovation, which is homegrown. I guess that's what I hope generally India becomes more, what we see more of from India in future.
So maybe now we can shift to Bombay Play. So you recently, maybe we could just start from the beginning. Like, why did you start the company? What did you see in it? And I know you recently raised some capital as well. So maybe you could talk us through the current history and trajectory of the company.
Yeah. So Bombay Play, so I guess Moonfrog, I was also a co-founder there.
Yep.
And, that company went through seed and Series A. But I felt like I always had this ambition of building games in India for the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really where the idea of sort of Bombay Play germinated. Now Bombay Play was started just over 3 years ago. We've again done seed and Series A. It's been one hell of a ride. The objective of Bombay Play, also the objective of Moonfrog in some way, it's to address the red ocean problem in gaming.
Mm-hmm.
Even back in 2015, when we started Moonfrog, we felt like we couldn't compete because there were so many games in pretty much every category, so many great games in each category, and we were seeing that marketing channels were getting expensive. So back then, we decided to look at the Indian audience and cater, content for them. It was an underserved audience, and that worked. What Bombay Play is trying to do is take some of the lessons that that were learned through developing for India to the world, and that's this idea of making games that focus on network effects.
Okay.
And that's what we're calling this genre of hypersocial.
Okay.
Which is just games that focus on network effects. Games that are built less like ice cream, which is a great single player experience, and more like pizza, which is best shared with friends. So it's you could say it's more of a product strategy.
Right.
I think every gaming company says that they'll leverage network effects, and it's important for every company's success. But when you start asking people how exactly are they pushing network effects, there's often no answer.
Right.
Like, it's this ethereal concept that, well, with scale, we'll get more people to play. What we've seen is that not many people have really thought through how to design their content for, I guess, how does your content become like a social network?
Right. So can you give us an example of how you do that at Bombay Play or for one in one of your games?
Sure. So this is, first of all, you need to pick a genre which is sort of intuitive to play with other people.
Okay.
Like, social isn't something that you should slap on top, right? It has to be there from the very core.
Right.
So one of our first games, it's called Card Party. It's a card game. This is, it's intuitive that you would sort of invite people to play a card game with you. And during the peak of the sort of pandemic, this was a big hit for us. And a lot of the people would play like, oh, I love this game because I can play with my kids, play with my, you know, play with my grandparents, whoever, play with my friends. It was the kind of game that is, the experience is enhanced, you know, through invites. Secondly, we build our games on HTML5 first.
Okay.
So sharing a game, like sharing any one of Bombay Play's games, is as simple as copy and pasting a link.
Okay.
So if I'm playing a card game, I can just share that link with my friend on WhatsApp or whatever.
Right.
And they can just click on that and jump into my game, be in the same context as me, and play right now.
So for you, your games are not mobile apps. They're HTML5 games. So if I'm playing on the phone, you're playing in browser. Is that?
Yeah, correct.
Okay.
That's how we start. And that's how we build what we call our atomic networks. Like, our main objective is to get to a point where there is a small community in your game that really sticks.
Okay.
If you have a bad game, that's never going to happen, right? The content is king after all. So no matter whether you develop it on H5 or make it inherently social, it doesn't, you know, content, if it's not good, then people won't play.
Okay.
Right. So it's really, so what we're calling hypersocial today is, yeah, games that are designed to be better with your friends, or you can advance further with them, or the fun is enhanced, and they're much easier to share. And by leveraging whatever technologies we can find. So that's also why we've been doing a lot of experiments on social networks like Facebook, because it really, you know, if a social game exists on a social network, it kind of makes, it removes the barriers to access it.
So how is Facebook gaming or instant gaming doing? Because I remember there was a period when people thought that would be the next big thing. I know I've worked on a number of projects on instant gaming, and like the retention was just trash.
Yeah,
it's just so hard to.
Yeah, I guess what do you regret more? So instant gaming these days, I would categorize it as a very advanced ad.
Okay.
Right. It's an ad which monetizes itself, and it allows you to cross-promote your most engaged users to your apps.
Okay.
Yeah. It's an ad that sort of also re-engages people for free.
Okay.
So, yeah, we try and build these games on instant kind of first, test them out.
Okay.
See if they have that core audience. And then if the basic the day one is trash, but if you are able to retain people beyond day one, sort of what is your return rate up until day 30? And, you know, what does that look like? Then you can tell whether your game really has a product market fit or not.
Okay. Yeah. So if you're launching on instant first, and then the game is playable anywhere, so, you know, web browser, mobile phones, mobile phone browser, things like that, how do you get distribution, or how do you, you've created a game, then how do you market it from there?
Sure. So there are the traditional methods that I think everyone's using. You can just market it like normal.
To a web URL?
A web URL. I mean, that's nothing new to promote a website versus but also there's cross promotion from Facebook Instant, which is also very effective. It's like you can just, the great thing about H5 is that you can acquire users at like a tenth of the cost. Mm. There's no install, right? Okay. The day one is low, so there is a balancing act you need to figure out. But you can really It's literally cents you can acquire users for.
Okay.
And it's also, you know, it's a channel which isn't as saturated as like App Store marketing.
Okay. And is it easy to monetize based upon these kind of games, or is it more ad based advertising?
Yeah, it's super tough. It's super tough to monetize. And but really, what you're looking at is like, what is your cross promotion LTV, and that's how you that's how you turn out positive at the end of the day.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Is there anyone working on a solution for like HTML5 IAP monetization? Is there something out there, or is it...
You can use whatever you want. Really, that's the beauty of it. Like, if it's a web page, then whatever you want. Yeah. Like direct bank transfer, baby. Let's go. Sure. What app store fee?
Okay.
Yeah.
And so I guess now that you've been doing this for 3 years, you raised some capital.
Hmm.
And so what's the plan to continue to build out these games? What's the kind of longer term strategy for Bombay Play?
It's really to make games the next social network.
Okay.
We think like a lot of games today, but let's talk about the ultimate goal is to disrupt casual gaming as we know it. Okay. Casual gaming, it does have some very social experiences there, but we from what we've seen of the market, the vast majority of games are still very much single player and or what we call low social, wherein sort of you install the game and you have to play for a long while before you get to the multiplayer bit.
Right.
And then maybe you can invite your friend who also has to download the game, play to where you are, and then you can matchmake. We think there's this space is sort of ripe for disruption, especially like maybe the simpler games that, you know, lots of people who don't even consider themselves gamers play, who have zero social features whatsoever. So that's kind of the low-hanging fruit we're going for first.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is TikTok a channel for you guys? Because I remember hearing about an HTML5 game blowing up, and it kind of blew up because of some TikTok or something like that. But
TikTok is an interesting channel, but and so is Snapchat, to be honest. Uh-huh. These are all instant platforms. But I think we're skeptical, to be honest.
Yeah.
TikTok is sort of inevitable, we think, because you know if you have a big user base and then games on that platform and then you already have monetization sort of figured out, it should work. But as a game developer, you have to sort of stop and think, how much does the company that owns this content really prioritize gaming?
Sure. Yeah, right. I wasn't speaking more as a gaming platform, but like some TikTok video of a HTML5 game kind of blew up, and then that led to a lot of...
Right. And there's been some great examples of this, by the way, like Wordle.
Okay.
That's a browser game, right?
Oh, okay. And
we're all together. We're all trying to solve one puzzle. It's a social experience, right? But that game didn't really have a social network around it.
Sure.
So you can really think, like, you can really describe Wordle as a low social game that people socialize over Twitter or, like, somehow made those connections and WhatsApp groups and these own their own insular groups. But a hypersocial game would really build a community within the game itself.
Okay.
Or maybe even allow people to make their own puzzles and share it with their friends to solve.
Right.
You know, like the design of the game at the core has to be social. Right.
Got it. Okay. And maybe one other question I can ask you is what's your outlook for Indian gaming development? Like, how do you think about India and the future of gaming here?
I would categorize it as inevitable.
Okay.
It's inevitable. Like, with the population, what it is, surpassing China.
Right.
Like, why? And the amount of investment that flows into India, Bangalore, particularly.
Highest GDP growth country.
Exactly. Like, India just has, and GDP growth is no joke. As soon as, when a company is growing at the speed of India, it takes a lot to slow it down.
Right.
The large sort of macroeconomic situation where we both find ourselves in today, India it just grows its way out of it.
Right.
Sure, there are in C, you're seeing a lot of a lot of countries actually get swallowed up by debt and by, I guess, instability. Okay. But India is not in that category. It's just it has such a strong economic machine that it's relatively stable in this sort of part of the world. And it's also a great sort of balance between East and West, I find. Like a large English-speaking like population, but also like the culture is kind of East-leaning at the same time.
Right.
It's well-situated to sort of perform well, and it already has in many many industries, and a lot of sort of Silicon Valley CEOs are Indian. And you know, imagine if that talent stayed in India. You know, imagine how many great companies would come out. Right. And I think that's starting to happen. The opportunities, especially in the startup world, are just becoming so well. The outcomes become so much greater that it really does become less of a no-brainer to move out to sort of Europe and US.
Yeah, Silicon Valley is not the same.
So. Yeah.
All right, so actually, let me ask you one final question then. Since we're here, we're in India, there's a lot of entrepreneurs in India, in Bangalore, a lot of people who want to start game studios. What advice would you give for them to kind of follow the path like you have, co-founding Moonfrog and Bombay Play now?
I think foolishness really helps. Don't overthink it. And there's no real right time. Mm-hmm. You just need to be in the market when the opportunity to execute comes up.
Right.
So so you don't need to immediately start a company with a great idea, is my personal sort of approach. You need to have a gaming company already with a team able to execute. So when you see the opportunity come up, finally, you're able to jump on it.
Right.
So yeah, I guess it's that famous saying, like, you know, a great idea has to find you working, right? So if you're locked inside some big MNC style company and you have a great game idea and you're not able to execute, well, there's not much you can do about that. But if you're in the field, there's a lot you can do. So
get into the arena.
Yeah. So get into the arena. And don't worry about your salary, I guess, for the first few years. It's not going to be the same, but, you know, I think we're talking about India specifically. Yeah. So living in Bangalore is a little bit more expensive, but you can make your own games. You can start your own team on a very low budget,
right?
If you lower your standard of living for a while, you can start on nothing. Like Moonfrog started with, I think, the equivalent of, I would say ballpark $60,000.
Wow.
That was the whole budget. Like when we started, it was just like 10 lakhs each. Yeah, that's what we put in. And that was it. And we were able to build a company that exited for 100 million, you know? People think that they need a lot of capital to start, but that's not entirely true either. You can start with a core team. Like Bombay Play, we also just started with three guys.
Okay.
Just working away. Card Party came out of that team of three. Okay. And from then on, we decided to raise money, etc. Like, I think the budget for starting Bombay Play was probably even lesser than it was for Moonfrog. So yeah, you really don't need a lot. You just need the knowledge, I guess. So, and from that, I think there's a great community out here, especially in Bangalore.
I will say that's absolutely the case. The Bangalore game community is very, very friendly, very welcoming.
Yeah. And so, if anyone's listening to us who wants to join, so link in the description. come say hi. We meet up every month, and
sounds good. All right, guys, there you have it. We are here with Mr. Oliver Jones, and we'll catch you next time. Thanks, everybody.